Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world.
Hello, and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, joined by lead cyber threat intelligence analyst, Mr. Casey Cannon. Casey, how are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Sean. Really excited to discuss this today.
Oh, 100%. Me too. This is awesome. We have a treat today. So we're delving into a day in the life of a CTI analyst, and no better other than to have Casey walk us through that. So today we're going to go through, you know, what got Casey interested in CTI and how does he start his day? You know, how many takedowns does he do in the morning? And then what does he resolve in the afternoon? You know, what sources is he using in order to do this type of work? And, you know, defining risk is going to be important here. When we're looking at prioritization of threats is very important. And then also how you're contributing that to our membership as well in this very valuable service. And then we'll also dive into some areas of now, how do I work with both SOC analysts and incident responders and really the community at large as well. So, with that, Casey, I'm going to jump into our first question is, what first got you interested in cyber threat intelligence?
Yeah, so I come from a law enforcement family. I've always been interested in security. There are a lot of different avenues, and I think probably more today than there ever have been to get involved in security. Always very service oriented. So I went and I did a master's in the UK that was security intelligence focused. I knew I wanted to work in some capacity in the security space, and cyber just seemed like a natural fit because, you know, everything is technology integrated, network integrated now. So cyber plays such a major role, whether it's homeland security, whether it's more enterprise security oriented. I knew there was a real avenue there, and I got a great internship before I came here that was really focused on the nuts and bolts of how to be an intelligence analyst. So I think that really teed me up nicely to set up and come to this team and take on really, while I had previously worked as an intelligence analyst, not at the level we are here that's really focused assessment-based analysis. So that really brought me in, and this was just such a great opportunity to help state, local, territorial, and tribal government entities provide them support services that many of them do need.
Now, that's wonderful. That's fantastic. And I love one of the things I see, again, in a lot of the cyber threat intelligence team is all this thought about service, paying it back, trying to build protection, trying to build capability, and then obviously using your training and analytical mind, as it were, to figure out these interesting puzzles and really contribute in a significant way. Because I think, you know, when I think about in this space, Casey, when we're thinking about cyber threat intelligence, the velocity of change and reaction, looking at technique is so, you know, a part necessarily of your day. So as we build into your day, so we've got the background, your motivation and your contribution, which we thank you for in a huge way, just the amazing work that you're doing. How do you start your day? You know, what's the first thing that you do? Is it, I'll do a couple takedowns and then I'll have my first coffee. You know, what does your start of your day look like?
Yeah, I usually find that, you know, I need a second cup of coffee after the fifth or sixth takedown personally. But no, in all seriousness, I do appreciate the kind words. And I think many among my team are very service oriented. I think to be an intelligence analyst, you really have to be, whatever term you use, client, customer, member, focused, because ultimately the work we do is meant to provide value to them. We could write a report that looks great to us, and if it doesn't provide value to them, then it's not useful. So an average day for me, I like to kind of get my feet under me. I want to know, are there any fires that need to be put out? Is there any major event? And unfortunately, there are days when that is true. And unfortunately, but fortunately, because those are the days where you can make a really big impact. But you're first looking at that. What types of reports are coming in? Is there anything that's, you know, impacting membership? Is there a big news story that might have an impact on the SLTT community that we need to focus on? So I usually try and start there. That way, you know, whatever I'm moving towards, at least I know I've checked the requisite boxes. There's nothing critical that I need to attend to. We have a very fluid dialogue across our team. So sometimes we are touching base back and forth. Maybe I saw an article and I was like, you know, this is interesting. Is this something, is this a software that might be running amongst our members? Is this a group that we've seen before? Those types of things. And I think once you're there, then you can, you know, focus and prioritize accordingly. So that's probably how I would start most days.
Wonderful. Yeah, no, that's it's a good day. In some cases, you know, that aligns to kind of my day. You know, what are the fires, right? Some things we have to put out. What was either identified overnight, or are there things coming through in terms of alert, incident, things of that nature that we'll need to deal with? And, you know, again, I think you're setting your priorities for the day, you know, necessarily. I always try this, Casey, and it just between me, you, and the audience necessarily. I have a list of things I want to accomplish in that day. But when I first start in the morning, well, that list goes out the window. And then it gets reprioritized, right? Because it's what is the, you know, the latest report? What are we seeing in terms of either the telemetry of our internal networks or the telemetry of others in order to then, now we've got necessarily a reaction in terms of, is this identified? Is this something we need to communicate? Now, we'll hit on the communication piece because what you mentioned with the report generation from your team and the way you build those reports is a very interesting process. But we'll get there. I promise, Casey. Now, Casey, one of the other things that I tend to fall into is I can get information overload. And then I'm starting to look for the quality in terms of the latest threat intelligence reports, adversarial activity, the latest breaches, you know, those types of things. How do you keep up with that velocity in there? And then we'll move into, you know, some of the sources that you'll use in order to keep yourself on the cutting edge necessarily.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there's no way to dismiss the level of complexity. What we see in the threat environment and also just the world, you know, new technologies emerging, not everything is directly or immediately tied to the threat environment. I personally think when you're dealing with complexity, I like to ask, how can I make this situation simple? And I think for us, it's bedrock principles really help drive us, help us prioritize. So it starts with our mission, vision, and values, understanding who we are as a team, what our goals are, who we're here to serve. With that established, certainly that's oriented towards the SLTT community. Then we have things like key intelligence questions, priority intelligence requirements. Once those are established, now we have a little bit of a compass that helps drive us towards, you know, where our focus is and what we're looking out for. So, you know, in short, the answer is not always obvious just because we have principles in place. I may see a new report and I may need to reach out to a few people. I may need to take a look at some data, reach out to the SOC or our CERT team, find out, you know, is there a prospective member impact that I need to be worried about? So the answer is it's not always obvious. You have to have that dialed. Some of it is you build an intuition. The more you do this, the more you understand these are the things that members tend to care about, or these are the things we're likely to get emails or contact about. But I'd say that really helps drive us towards. And then, you know, the second thing that we'll do beyond just kind of having our team building blocks in place is understanding a very simple matrix. It's opportunity, capability, and intent. So the question is, does a threat actor, does this particular threat, do they have the capability to do something? Do they intend to do it? And is there an opportunity? And if those three boxes are checked, then maybe we need to get digging. But having those in place, I find to be really useful to help guide us.
Yeah, no, I think a structured approach makes sense, right? Because the deluge necessarily can either create a bias or miss certain elements. As you mentioned, you're kind of going with the diamond model type of approach, and things of that nature helps us assess what's a priority, what needs to be reviewed. Now are we looking at motivational elements? Because it's a... CTI, again, I'm a big fan why I want to do this and talk to you, but it's more than just the technology. there's a psychology element, there's a motivation, there's an understanding of tactic and technique, and thinking about how that goes from kind of, you know, we'll do red and blue, you know, in terms of red being offensive, blue being a defensive capability, and trying to see that is a huge responsibility. And I think requires necessarily the dexterity of mind to both think of, you know, how would I utilize certain attack vector? How am I seeing those being used? And then ultimately, how can I contribute to a defensive capability that we need to start alerting individuals necessarily within our own organization and those outside? So I think there's, you get to kind of play in both worlds. I think, you know, kind of be purple teaming necessarily, or at least purple awareness in bringing that to light. And with that awareness, Casey, you know, what are some of the sources of intelligence that you use? You know, is this all about, we're just in the, you know, the dark or the deep web necessarily all the time? We're using open source, we're looking at other reports that we receive, threat feeds. You know, how, any thoughts on some of the sources that you use?
Yeah, and I won't go on a tangent here, but I will note that, you know, you tapping on, you know, some of the way that our mind can come to, can formulate biases around, you know, when we're receiving a lot of information, having to sift through that, that's really kind of the bedrock of a lot of the tradecraft they teach you when you're becoming an intelligence analyst. A lot of that is how, you know, there's the psychology of the adversary, but there's also our own psychology. How do we make sense of things? And oftentimes that's happening in the background. And that's why structure is such a key component of being an effective intelligence analyst and a cyber threat intelligence analyst as well. To your question about sources, to me, I think what's really important is that you have an eclectic set of sourcing. That's going to include, you know, things you're going to get from open source, from our partners, what we're seeing from our own membership. And as you mentioned, obviously things from the threat actors themselves, being able to collect on that is of course important. And I think, you know, also the more time you spend, you know, it's just like in college, you understand what a good source to cite for a paper is. Similarly with cyber, you know, who puts out good reporting over time. But I think having that kind of diverse set, it allows you to see, well, maybe we saw something internally. Is this emblematic of a larger trend? Are our partners seeing something? So the more you can have that kind of eclectic approach, the more you can fill in gaps where necessary. We're not going to catch everything, you know, immediately. But I feel that if we cover enough bases in a you know, rounded way, then at least we're aware of like what the big trends are, and we know where to look if we have to look for something. But those relationships, I think, also are something that I need to foot stomp, because it's such an important, and probably a lot of people who are on the outside don't necessarily think, you know, it's cyber. We're talking about technology. We're talking about indicators of compromise. You know, the people element shouldn't be as important. But in my experience, it truly is. The more that we can lean on others who might be seeing things and leverage those relationships, I think the more effective we can be as a team.
Definitely. Yeah, it kind of leads me down a path that I think even sourcing the right information is a skill set unto itself, you know, open source intelligence, being able to assess, you know, dark web threats necessarily that you would consider, yeah, this is something we need to identify, or at least looking at breach elements and looking at validation of certain data types. And then the threat feed, you know, when I'm thinking about certain threat feeds I'm reviewing, or those I'm listening to necessarily, and that's through social media, through, you know, the website publication, things of that nature, is, I have certain people that have, I'll say it this way, Casey, it's going to be, you know, something we can discuss, but like certain flavors, you know, if I'm thinking about Mac necessarily, yep, I've got the people that I trust who are looking at that. Windows, yep, I've got that, some thoughts in that space, and tactics and techniques and identifying capability, signature development, and things of that nature. So you're kind of categorizing necessarily the people you're listening to. But I also like to, how do I say it? I like to sprinkle in some new, because there is a lot of new talent coming up so fast. There, you know, we've got such a great community, you know, in the general cybersecurity space. And it's always interesting to see them with, you know, their particular perspectives and their thoughts and the research that they've been doing. And it's, we kind of get into areas of nuance. It's not just Windows that we're looking at now. It's specific drivers in that infrastructure that, oh, this person's got a real understanding of this and can help identify and provide some insight in that space. So I think it, you know, that there's, again, so much to the deluge. And so, but I try and not just read, you know, kind of the true elements that I've identified as, I think, serious researchers in this space, but also try to look at the new talent, because there's, you know, I love new thought. I think we need to kind of ingest that to ourselves so that we're not necessarily biased and thinking differently. And truly, to your point, when you see personnel that have the right training, the right ambition, motivation, and the right information to do something with that, I mean, a lot of people become, you know, truly talented and trusted within our community. And I think that's so good. And I also see that reflected with the work that your team does as well, as being, you know, that trusted partner necessarily to our membership that allows us to, one, we've built the trust here, you know, this is what we're using, we're investing in what we're able to do and able to communicate effectively. I told you I'd come back to communication, is, you know, really those elements really create that strength. And so, you know, when we're working with membership, it's often hard, and even for ourselves, to filter out that noise necessarily. And that can come both from that, you know, looking for the threat information, but also necessarily from our own underlying systems, you know, and how we're identifying those real threats. So when you think about it in that vein, how do you filter out necessarily the noise of, yeah, this is maybe media hype, and it's not necessarily something I'm going to consume as part of what I'm doing with your day to day, to really get down to that thread that you're going to pull on, that this is identifying a real threat, or this is something I want to investigate in order to identify whether or not it is a real threat. How do you manage that? Because I can imagine that's a skill, or maybe even an art over time, that you develop an instinct and you kind of build a capability in that space. Am I, at least if I'm right in that space, and then your thoughts on, you know, filtering out the noise.
Yeah, it's not easy to do. And I think, you know, the simple answer is it comes back a little bit to some of those bedrock principles, understanding the capability, opportunity, and intent of threat actors. But the longer answer is that it can be case dependent. You know, sometimes we'll hear about a report, and we need to reach out to a few people. Sometimes it's obvious. There are things where it's just, you know, there are certain ransomware incidents, for instance. If we see that direct connection, that's obvious to us that this is something we need to look into. Do we have direct insight into it where we can actually independently verify? When that's the case, it's fantastic. It's not always going to be the case. I think it's something we're improving at from a skill set standpoint at like within our team. But yeah, it can be a challenge. You know, another situation where it's important to rely on our partnerships, but some of those partnerships are internal too. We have a SOC, we have a CERT team. What are they seeing? Are they observing anything that's related? So once we identify that something's relevant, you know, then the priority becomes, okay, how big of an impact is it? You know, we see a span of cyber attacks and they're happening every day. I wouldn't refer to any cyber attack is something that's, you know, inconsequential or it's not important. But there are others that, you know, we would prioritize over others because of the prospective impact. Whether we see some type of tactic that's likely to impact membership, we're seeing it scale from public reporting, or we're also seeing it in our internal reporting. We recognize where many of our members are running a similar client. We've seen victims, for instance, that touch on our member set. Those are all things that help us prioritize, but I also think it's important to be forward-looking. Just because you're not seeing something in your data set yet doesn't mean it's not around the corner. And I think that's really when you have to put your intelligence analyst hat on at times. It's not just the CTI technical side. Sometimes it is, we got to use our imagination a little bit, or we need to hop in and do some structured techniques, or maybe we need to hop on a call and talk through something. But that level of care and dedication to these topics is really essential. It is a team sport, and we do have to work through when these things emerge. Sometimes it's very easy and we can quickly kind of dismiss, you know, this isn't something I'm principally worried about for membership, or this is more impacting a vendor, for instance, and the vendor is going to put out the primary communications. These are all types of things that we're going to balance internally. But it's not always an easy answer, that's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And again, I think like as you build that instinct over time, because one of the things I could see myself doing in such a role is kind of going down rabbit holes and then coming back up. And that was, well, it may not have been a waste of time. I learned something potentially, but I'll know not to do that again. And then, you know, I'll find the next rabbit hole and kind of I'd be trial and error in a lot of cases until, oh, now I get, you know, kind of this flow or this an ability to assess the intelligence, ultimately, in some cases, data, which you then transfer into intelligence, right? And then we'll distribute. And I think that takes a lot of sifting. And, you know, and I think, and again, I touched on the communication piece, but this is one where I think it's very, very important is when necessarily you're building a report, a product, a notification, I think the communication element obviously has to have where you're identifying you need to pay attention to this now. And you know, utilizing language and utilizing an approach with our membership, whether old or new, you know, that there's always a consistency to what we bring in terms of providing that intelligence out. So when you're assessing and prioritizing threats on behalf of members or others in our community, you know, what, how do you determine necessarily, well, this is the high risk element we need to kind of push and utilize maybe stronger language of attention, you know, make sure you're looking at this now versus low risk, more awareness. It is a risk still, but not something, you know, that's, you know, at the kind of alarm or alert level. How do you manage that necessarily? And what practices do you use in that space?
Yeah, I think, you know, similar to us, where there's a lot of noise in the community from what we're seeing from a threat side, we recognize that our members who might be receiving a report from us, they're getting a lot of information too, and not all of it's cyber. Not all of them are entirely cyber focused. So I think we have to be very judicious about almost kind of treating their attention span, their time as a commodity in and of itself. And that helps us be very discerning about when we're pushing things out. So we try to not send out a report that's not about something timely, actionable, and relevant to what's happening in their environment. So that's where we're starting from. That's our starting point. There are certain times where something will go out as an alert and it's same day, it's, you know, a few hours turnaround. That's usually something where, you know, something's urgent, it's ongoing, there's some type of incident. It may be impacting only a specific sector, and then maybe we want to tailor that report to that specific sector. So we do have that delivery mechanism in place. Those do happen occasionally. It's usually when we're seeing kind of some type of widespread impact and we know there's an SLTT nexus to it, we might send out a report like that. But, you know, some of our other reports that are maybe a little more analytic focused, they might be making broader assessments, either forward thinking, anticipatory about where the future of this is going. It could be a little more diagnostic, more focused on kind of the nature of the activity that we're seeing. So even those reports, we certainly don't want to push it past the time where it's still relevant. It needs to fit into that tight window where it can come around. And there is still something, you know, as analysts, we talk about often the what and the so what, and then ideally also the now what. So there's something going on that you need to know about. So what? That's the what. The so what is, why does this matter to you? And then the now what is, given this information, what can and should you do about it? So we try to keep that all in mind and balancing that timely, relevant, and actionable aspect. And we do also have reporting that might be a little more forward-looking, that might be focused a little more on the state of play that's not as timely. But what I think we've done well is building specific vehicles and report types that make it very clear that what's coming out to you is maybe more of a long-term outlook. This is something we've seen from a trend analysis standpoint versus this is kind of a drop in everything. This is something you need to attend to right now.
Yeah, no, that's good. And I think that tactic is so effective because it's necessarily, you know, I'll just take my own inbox, littered with things, right? And the way we communicate, it's oh, I need to pay attention to this because it's not just something we say, oh, you know, we're just checking in, how are you doing? No, this is actionable. This is something we need to understand. And also the formatting necessarily is structured in such a way that I can, it takes me a few seconds to grasp what we're talking about and necessarily then the severity of, and again, communication being so important in that space, because like you say, commodity, the time is, you know, time is money, and necessarily we want to communicate the value quickly enough that they understand necessarily this intelligence needs to be transformed into action on your side, one, either as a preventative strategy, or two, as a detective mechanism, so that you can necessarily mitigate this risk as quickly as possible, because time is money, but time is also an element in cybersecurity, because dwell time necessarily of an adversary in an underlying infrastructure can have, you know, seconds or consequences necessarily in that space. Excellent. And you'd also mentioned, Casey, you know, working with other teams, right? So you're working with our SOC, incident responders, multiple other teams in the organization. How do you necessarily communicate in terms of, one, being a subject matter expert in areas, obviously, that are pertinent to their workday necessarily, but then also getting information from them, like you said, you know, they may be seeing something that we want to pay attention to, or they may alert and say, hey, you know, can you do some analysis in the space on our behalf? Because we're starting to see, you know, either members identify or even the analysts themselves doing that type of data analytical work in terms of what we're seeing in our infrastructure. So how does that work? Is that a just a common occurrence? Is that, yep, every day we're just communicating? Or is it more as and when certain elements are needed?
Yeah, I would say that it's something that we've definitely improved on over time. I think it needs to be fluid. So that means we have to really understand what are the, you know, job requirements for a SOC analyst, what are the operating requirements for a CERT analyst. So when we can understand that, to me, an operations department works at its best when there's that really kind of synced up, integrated effort across those teams. And that can be a force multiplier, in my opinion, when you know, for us, to me, what I would call a golden report is we're taking data from a CERT case. Obviously, we don't want a member to be a victim of a cyber incident. But in terms of being able to demystify an issue and provide valuable insights, having that is critical. Similar to the SOC, understanding what they're observing from their side, the more we can integrate that as a CTI analyst, the better. Now, from an operational standpoint, again, having that fluid line of communication, you know, hey, this might be valuable to you. You know, for instance, if we were, you know, scouring some of our sourcing and found a decryptor available, that might be something we would want to share with our incident response team. Similarly, if there's an ongoing incident impacting, you know, someone in the SLTT community and we observe it through one of our collections, that's something we want to get over to the SOC. But, it, you know, again, you talk about this, you know, the importance and the commodity of time and attention is, I don't want to just throw something to a SOC analyst without having vetted it first, because that's not a good use of their time. That's not good for my own credibility. So actually going through that extra work to pour through and understand, well, if I hand it to them, what are they going to do with it? What do they need? And what will make this the most helpful for them? So I think the more we can understand and integrate with what they're doing, the more effective we can be bidirectionally. We can pass things to the SOC and vice versa, because they understand what we're looking for. We understand there's an impact to membership and there's something we see. We're going to vet, verify, validate all that information before we pass along to the best of our ability. You can't always gain certainty with things you find in illicit marketplaces, but I think that's really a key component. And it's also why it's important for us to meet, whether it's informally in a social setting or more formally on regular meetings, to understand, you know, what are they seeing? What are our focuses? Like, we do have our key intel questions throughout the year, but is there something we're prioritizing right now? The more we can make that known to other teams, that means when they come across something, they see an alert or they receive a notification about something, they'll go, oh, Casey CTI, he might want to know a little more about this.
Absolutely. No, hey, again, the team dynamic is huge, because there is such a camaraderie between necessarily the groups. And in a lot of cases, it's kind of just a single org entity, right? In terms of just identify, you know, we've got the detection capability, we've got the intelligence piece, we've got the response piece, you know, if there's an eventuality of a certain flavor of attack or whatever it happens to be, and all coming together. And it's really great to see because there is such again, we've got everybody's back, right? And it helps build that, and being part of, that group, I'm sure is very fulfilling. And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break. Are you a U.S. state, local, tribal, or territorial government organization? Well, if so, you know how remote and hybrid work models make it really difficult to protect your endpoints and manage your vulnerabilities? Well, this is where CIS Endpoint Security Services can help. Now available exclusively to U.S. SLTTs like yours, CIS ESS deploys directly on endpoint devices to help you identify, detect, respond to, and remediate endpoint security incidents and alerts. Now, it works in partnership with our 24/7/365 CIS Security Operations Center, which analyzes threat detections and notifies you of actionable endpoint security incidents, all within 5 minutes. Now, ESS also comes with add-on and standalone capabilities that provide real-time insight into vulnerability and mobile devices, including those of subordinate organizations you oversee. So strengthen your endpoint defenses today by visiting cisecurity.org. Thank you. And let's jump back into the episode. Now we go into our last question. I can't believe we're at the end of the episode. That was fantastic. But now that we've sold that CTI is such an awesome career and things like that, exactly. What advice would you give someone looking to maybe move into a career in cyber threat intelligence?
Yeah, I think there are some really great guides out there from industry folks that really help with the nuts and bolts and trainings tied to all the the component skills of being a CTI analyst. What I'd say is we really emphasize the idea of a T-shape. And what that means is you think of what I would call some of the component parts of being a CTI analyst, some of the technical skills, you know, anything from forensics to pen testing to understanding, you know, again, some of the networking components or DNS. You know, we have a member of the team, we call the DNS king, because you give him one phishing email and he can find you, you know, 100 to 1,000 additional indicators of malicious activity associated. Those are all important components. But the idea is there's no one member of the team who I think is excellent at every one of them. We want to be good and competent in all of those skill sets. But the idea is collectively as a team, we are able to be very effective at all of those components. So when that comes down to the individual, what you want to do, and going back to the T, the idea is you're broad on the top, but there's one area going downwards where you're exceptional at. So someone who's interested, what I would say is if you can gain a familiarity with the component parts of CTI, that's great. And if you find an area you're really passionate about or something you think you can do really well at, then maximize your ability to do that skill effectively. I didn't come in with necessarily a ton of technical skills. I came in with a little more of an analytic tradecraft background, and that's something I've been able to help the team with. But I can't show up and support my teammates if, you know, I have these huge gaps in certain areas. There's a forensic report we're looking at and I can't make heads or tails of it. I'm not going to be very useful to the team. So kind of having that well-rounded perspective is really useful. And then to me, one thing, you know, you've talked about communication a number of times during this podcast, is the more you can improve that skill set, I think writing is a great way to do it. One thing anyone can do is start up a blog, or, you know, if you're in school or you're part of a club where you can put out a newsletter, something where you have a feedback loop, ideally. But what that's going to force you to do is take all those component parts, take technical work that you're doing in real time, and really transcribe that and communicate that in a way to pick your target stakeholder. Clear writing is clear thinking, in my opinion. So an effective analyst, we're not very useful you know, we can do technical things on the back end that do bring value, but to help members to make them aware of certain threat activity and what they need to do about it, we need to be able to effectively communicate that both in written and spoken form. So the more you can do that, to me, it's really the piece that puts everything together. Because, you know, if you tried out some, you know, red teaming tools or you read through a forensics report and you were able to make sense of it, well, you sitting down and writing that into a report delivered to a stakeholder, that's how you're starting to gain mastery over that topic and those skills that you're already flexing outside of it. That to me is really kind of the glue that holds everything together. So, I mean, that's the best advice I could give, but have fun with it. This is a, you know, it's hard and it's serious what we're doing. We're very mission driven, but it can also be fun. So the more you can recognize that and have fun with what you're doing, I think the more this can be, you know, a fulfilling and a promising career path for you, anyone who's interested in this field.
Wonderful. Fantastic. Well, again, thank you, Casey, for sharing your insights. And again, thank you again to you and your team for all the great work that you continue to do. So impressive, so appreciated both internally and by our membership. Absolutely fantastic. So thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to the audience. Thank you for joining. Remember to subscribe using your favorite podcast platform. Catch us on YouTube at TheCI Security. Click that subscribe button, hit the notification bell to hear episodes like this and much, much more. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.